What I see my brief today is to talk about immigration and ethnic diversity in a cosmopolitan civil society, and to start thinking about that. And so what I really want to start with is some conceptual concerns and some conceptual questions, and then develop from that about research possibilities. And what I'll do is talk about a lot of the different sorts of research that I and my PhD students have been doing, and then as an example of the diversity of different sorts of research opportunities, and then talk about some future developments. So can I stress from the start that this is all fairly, shall we say, tentative? I think we're all working our way into this cosmopolitan civil society's area, sort of feeling where we can fit in, where we can sort of fit in together. So, and I think that's a good thing because it enables us to explore together, sort of what we mean about those things. And of course, I guess the most controversial term here is the term cosmopolitan. It's had a very elitist reading and meaning in a lot of circumstances, where we talk about cosmopolitan elites who travel internationally and, fly to Paris, to London, to Tokyo, and enjoy the three chef's hats meals and the opera and whatever. It seems to me that that is certainly one meaning that we find, and that's not a meaning that I'm actually very interested in. I mean, the circumstance of elites, I think they look after themselves pretty well. The way in which I like to approach cosmopolitanism in this regard takes off. You might have seen Paul Keating's piece a few weeks ago where he talks about cosmopolitanism, and he takes the Oxford dictionary definition, which is essentially, put crudely, diversity with equality. And that's sort of the meaning that I like to propose, that we have diversity, cultural, religious, or whatever other, but the underlying basis is how do you have a diverse society that is also an equal one? And I think that's the opposite end of the elitist sort of view. And in a sense, I suppose what I'd like to do is to fight for the populist meaning of that, and the politics and the research that develops from that. But what I'm interested really is in how immigrant communities and immigrant minorities fit into this. But that's not to say that, of course, our cosmopolitanism has a broader source than just immigration. And of course, I'm thinking about our indigenous communities here who were very cosmopolitan before whites arrived. So what I want to start with is a number of questions that I want to sort of talk about or think about and then move to the research. So the first question is this, how can we reconcile this elitist versus egalitarian view of cosmopolitan society? Is it possible to do that? Is it possible within the framework of the concept of cosmopolitanism to get a non-elitist view? The second question really is how civil society contributes to a cosmopolitan agrarian society. In other words, what's the role of civil society in this egalitarian view of cosmopolitanism? And what role does civil society play in our multicultural society? The third question is more specific than that. What role do immigrant communities play? What I might call the immigrant civil society organisations play, or have they played in cosmopolitanism and in Australian society? The next question really is, if I'm privileging equality as being the benchmark that we're testing in society, how do we stand according to that? In other words, in particular, what is the evidence with respect to the degrees of equality or inequality for immigrant communities in Australia, and what's happened over time? The fifth question really is one that I've hinted at already, is to what extent are the tensions between immigrant minorities and indigenous communities, how to resolve those questions under these other umbrellas? And certainly, as you all know, there's been a very uneasy relationship with indigenous communities and multiculturalism. And indeed, that's one of its key contradictions and its key problems, that it hasn't resolved. And maybe it's been asked before that's become resolved. But I think that's an important question. And then the final question, as I mentioned to you, relates to research agendas. Now, what sorts of research stuff comes out of this concern about immigrant communities, and what sorts of research can we do? And as I said, I really draw on a range of programs that I've been involved in to give you a sense. I think the breadth is really only limited by your imagination as to what you can actually fit into this particular umbrella, which is good in many ways because it's not a very sort of constricting and confined space, I hope. Well, let's turn to the first question about this sort of tension between elitist and egalitarian views as cosmopolitanism. I mean, on the one hand, you get people like Richard Florida, who, as you know, has sort of been promoting the notion of creative cities and, you know, what constitutes a creative city, and talking very much about people love diversity and they sort of move to places when they can experience diversity and have diverse cuisines and cultural events and just the general cosmopolitanism feel. So in that sense, in many ways, cosmopolitanism is an attraction. It acts as a magnet to the global circulation of people and workers and so forth. The interesting thing about that is that Florida doesn't all address the issues of immigrant diversity within that. You know, there's hardly any mention at all or reference to that. And so it seems to me while he says here, creative-minded people enjoy a mix of influences. They want to hear different kinds of music, try different kinds of foods and so forth. I mean, you know, that sort of equates to the fairly sort of ephemeral sort of notion of I guess cosmopolitanism and multiculturalism that's attracted a number of critics. For example, you will be aware of the work of Ghassan Haj and his work in particular about white nation and whiteness. And he has a view here essentially to some extent, I think I'm putting it very crudely here because, you know, to do justice to it is a much more complex view, but essentially that multiculturalism is a way of buying off immigrant diversity, of including people but in a subordinate sort of inferior relationship, how it's the white gaze that dominates, and really almost saying that, you know, multiculturalism really has got nothing for immigrants themselves. It's all about Anglo-whites maintaining their power and their privilege. So in a sense, that's really a sort of a notion that's saying that, you know, sort of, you know, all this sort of stuff about the Florida stuff pretty much fits into the sort of stuff that Ghassan's criticising. But in my view, and of course we would need to take more time to talk about this, but it seems to me that part of the problem with Ghassan's view about multiculturalism is that what he doesn't recognise is the agency of migrant communities themselves who fought for multiculturalism. And of course, they fought for it because assimilation, the preceding philosophy of immigrant settlement, which dominated from 47 till the 70s, whenever you want to date multiculturalism's rise, I mean, that was one where clearly immigrant inequality was a product and a consequence of that, where immigrants had to become like us. And it condoned, in a very unambiguous way, white power and privilege, and condemned most immigrant minorities to inequality. And it was because immigrant kids were failing at schools, because immigrants in the society couldn't get access to services and whatever, that sort of, you know, different ethnic groups, ethnic associations, as well as people like the Teachers Federation and other progressive organisations fought for the end of assimilation, for multiculturalism. And what they got under the first phase of multiculturalism, which was the Galbally-Fraser multiculturalism, was the right to public space, the right to sort of have their, you know, we used to talk about the 4 Ds, you know, dance, diet, dialect and dress. So, you know, to be an immigrant minority, and for that say, okay, prior to that, under assimilation, they say, don't, you know, speak English if you're here. People would hear immigrants talking Greek or Italian on the bus, and they'd tell them, speak English, and there was a really resentful sort of notion that there was no right for public space. Now, it's popular amongst sort of some leftist academics now to deride this 4Ds, to say, well, it's all ephemeral, it's all trappings, it's all concessions, but, you know, it's a terrifically important advance that immigrant minorities have had about the right to live in public space and to have their religious and their dress and whatever. And I think people like us underestimate the terrific gains that were made in that particular period. And the other point to be made in many ways is that the attack on that period doesn't recognise the fact that since then, where they had Hawke Keating multiculturalism and where they had Howard Ruddock multiculturalism, And in those latter variants, almost all the things that were developed under the Garibaldi model have been dissipated, diluted, in many cases removed. It seems to me that I think that multiculturalism has developed, certainly in its earlier phase, I think, a lot of egalitarian trends. Of course, it hasn't constituted immigrant minorities as equals to us, the rest of the people, but I think it has that particular potential. The other view of cosmopolitanism is, you know, the critique that it's just the Western gaze, that, you know, the East has no place in it, and it's a corollary to the Ghassan Haj type argument. And I'd like to think that we can develop a cosmopolitanism that sort of that responds to and accepts the challenges that those critics lay at it, and in fact, you know, sort of moves it towards a much more egalitarian, effective place for migrant communities in Australian society. Of course, the thing is, 9/11 sort of changed the whole of this and gave the pretext and the imprimatur for the final dismantling of multiculturalism, at least as a set of public policies and philosophies. And as you know, both, some ministers talk about under the Howard government changed from the Department of Immigration and Multicultural Affairs to the Department of Immigration and Citizenship. Multiculturalism doesn't that. And the Labor Party has moved to accept an integration model. So we're really at a critical point in terms of the politics of the whole thing. What does civil society contribute to cosmopolitan society? Well, the whole thing about the Garibaldi multiculturalism was that ethnic community organisations were engaged in the delivery of the programs and services. They were the critical part of that whole sort of period of multiculturalism. Ethnic community organisations were given funds to employ grant and aid workers and other workers, and they were really the lifeblood of that thing. If you compare it today, migrant organisations have been marginalised, isolated. Ruddock used to threaten migrant resource centres with cutting their funding if they dared to be publicly critical of the government. At the same time, in New South Wales, we used to have the Ethnic Affairs Commission. The chair of that, Stephan Kerkesharian, fought the fight to change that name to the Community Relations Commissions. All the ethnic community organisations disagreed with that. Kerkesharian and Carr won the day. And Andrew and I, and probably others, were at the launch of that, where Carl launched this new thing, and he said, look, the word ethnic has no salience today. It doesn't mean anything anymore. We've got to move from that old divisive notion of, you know, separate silos of communities to this notion of community relations. But the interesting thing is, the very next day, having said that, Carr was making speeches about ethnic crime. In other words, ethnic had no salience anymore in our society, but it was very important to understand ethnic crime, because there are those Lebanese gangs that were destroying the whole place and whatever. So there's a real contradiction about that. But the point I'm trying to make here is that ethnic communities and ethnic community organisations themselves are shadows of their former glory days in the 80s. Their power and their influence in politics. Maybe that's a consequence of themselves, because, you know, it was that the organisation dynamics were very much that sort of aged males would want to take control and power and maintain that, and not letting women and young people sort of move over. So I think there's certainly an element of that. And it's also true that multiculturalism anointed conservative ethnic community organisations and leaders, and not radical or more, you know, sort of progressive ones. And that's also true of that. The immigrant communities were quite critical to the multiculturalism, but immigrant communities were also very critical to our cosmopolitan society in general and its egalitarianism. And I'm referring here to the work that Walter Lalich did under a PhD that I supervised, where what he did, he surveyed about 340 or so of the migrant community organisations in Sydney who had built a building out of collective funds for the purpose of recreation, religion, childcare or education. This is a story about the immigrant experience that's never been told. You know, the labour, the capital these people built these buildings, the activities that occurred there, and not only that, but the social relations that developed, because initially they were very much internal, what we would call bonding social capital, because these places were oases for ethnic communities to meet, because the outside in different community didn't have space for them. But over time they became places where the multicultural community would also become share a part of. And so what Wally did is try to sort of say, how much money was whacked in, how much time, how many people, get to the nuts and bolts of this contribution. And once again, I mean, this is a contribution to our sort of our cosmopolitan society, but it's one that you never hear about in the immigration debates and these other sorts of things. So, and he concluded that, sort of $930 million have been poured into those places by sort of money that immigrant communities raise themselves, by unpaid labour, by volunteer labour. And I think that's an important thing. The next question, and excuse me for raising briefly on these because of the limited time, but to what degree do we have equality in our cosmopolitan society? And in particular, are ethnic groups or immigrant groups, are they becoming more or less equal? It is true, as Ghassan says, that by and large the citadels of power are maintained by the white community, but there are many, many instances where that's not true. I mean, I can point to a number of leaders of multinational corporations who come from immigrant minorities, normally Southern European or whatever, and not necessarily Asian or whatever, but nevertheless there's been a movement to that. If you look at the wealthiest 200, the Business Review Weekly each year whacks this wealthiest 200 Australian families, and the joke I always tell is that each year I look there and my name's not there and I wonder why. The thing is that, a higher proportion of migrant minorities are involved in that than the minorities are as part of the Australian population. That's an index of access to power and privilege and wealth. The multimillionaires have got your John Simons and your other people involved in that. And at the same time, though, you have a terrific disadvantage amongst immigrant communities. And studies of poverty and studies of inequality point to the fact that some groups of immigrants are particularly disadvantaged. For example, the rates of unemployment amongst Lebanese and Vietnamese is 3 to 4 times the national average, and it's been the case for 20 years. And I haven't seen the 06 census data, which will be interesting, because we've had such a long boom. But the thing is that there are a lot of groups in society who haven't shared in those things. So it seems to me that basically the whole thing is a mixed bag in terms of that. The clear there is inequality in Australian society. That inequality has increased in the last decade or two of globalisation, and we'll expect it to increase further. But having said that, migrant communities seem to have a share at the top end and a share at the bottom end. And I think that's an important thing to remember about migrant communities, because we have immigrants across all social classes in Australia. Angeline will be reporting on the work about female immigrant entrepreneurship, the small business sector, the entrepreneur petty bourgeoisie. And there's been a long tradition of that, often because their mobility was blocked in other areas, and that was the only space and place where they could work, the Greek milk bars, the Chinese cafes and restaurants and whatever. Also amongst the ruling class, I mentioned the wealthy families, amongst the working class, of course, the workers, the Southern Europeans, the factory fodder workers of the 50s and 60s, and also amongst the underclass, if there is one, and we could debate that particular notion. So to some extent, we certainly don't have equality in Australian society. It's as unequal as British or American society, although we have this myth of egalitarianism that's really not true. But it seems to me that what has changed is that whereas before, when I was writing about this in the 70s, I could say clearly that it's very different whether you're immigrant from an English-speaking country or non-English-speaking country. English-speaking country, same profile in the labour market as Australian-born. Non-English-speaking migrants, the secondary labour market, the factory fodder, the shit jobs. And there was a very clear demarcation. If you look today, because of changes in immigration with globalisation, most of the minorities coming from Asia and other countries are highly skilled, professional, technically well-qualified people. They're moving into what economists call the primary labour market, in the high jobs in finance and other areas. There may still be blocked mobility, what I call an accent ceiling that prevents them going right up the top, but still they've moved into that labour market which wasn't there before. So that's over time, if you like. The profile of immigrant minorities has improved. If you look at education, the education university rates of some migrant minority communities, quite high compared to others. So there's a lot of evidence about that. Bob Birrell would say, therefore, we don't need multicultural education programs anymore. I think that's a lot of rot, because while some immigrant communities are doing well in education, occasion, there are still a lot of others who are doing very poorly. And sometimes within the same community, you have a bimodal distribution. You've got two humps at the camel at the top end of the bottom end. So, you know, you can't conclude, therefore, that we don't need multicultural education or these other sorts of things. We have, I think, a mixed bag with respect to the equality issue, but it seems to me that the multiculturalism period, particularly Galbally multiculturalism, but also maybe Horton Keating, did help and contribute to the increasing equality of immigrants in Australian society, which is, you know, the main reason in many ways that people like myself are very unhappy that it appears to be going, although it remains to be seen what replaces it. The tension between Indigenous and immigrant communities, I think, is interesting. And I've always thought that multiculturalism had a number of contradictions and problems. First of all, the place of Indigenous peoples within it, because Indigenous people, see these other people and they say, you know, all these immigrant communities, they get all this stuff and all this help and we get nothing. And there's a lot of, we talk about the racisms of contemporary society. There's racism between Indigenous people and other peoples. There's racism within immigrant communities with respect to other communities and with respect to the Indigenous community. So there's a lot of racial tension and difference there. It seems to me that's a real question about how do you include immigrants. Now, in New Zealand, you probably know, they have a policy of what's called biculturalism. They've got two legs. On the one leg, the Maori leg, the Indigenous leg, and the other, the rest. The strength of that is that the Indigenous people have got a full leg there, and you see that by representation in Parliament and all sorts of other centrality in New Zealand society. So when we play the All Blacks, they do the haka, an Indigenous thing. Australians mainstream have never adopted anything like that. That's just a small token example. But the problem with biculturalism is in the other leg, you've got the white Pākehā plus the immigrant minorities plus the Pacific Islanders, you lump them all together. And I think there's a real problem with that because, you don't allow for that diversity and difference and so forth. It seems to me that that's a real challenge for multiculturalism that are never actually really addressed, partly because, of course, the whole reconciliation agenda was stalled and albeit abandoned by the current government. And there's been, those roads that needed to be walked just were cut off and we went in a different direction. The other, I think, challenge for Australian multiculturalism, and this is almost the opposite of what Ghassan would say, the challenge for multiculturalism for me is to make the cliché multiculturalism is for all Australians from a cliché to reality. Part of the problem with multiculturalism is just that the Indigenous people didn't find a place in it. A lot of white Anglo-Celts didn't find a place in it either. And it's easy for Ghassan to say, well, that's all white power, they didn't need a place, they were still the dominant. I mean, of course, whites are a very diverse group, and you can't lump the unemployed streetless home person on the corner with the multi-millionaires. They may be all white, but they've got very, very different relations of power. So, Andrew gives me 5 minutes, so let me just switch to the research agenda. Now, there are a lot of things that can come out of that, and I won't go into detail, but I'll just give you some general areas of some of the research that I've done. A lot of work on ethnic crime. That's been one of the most divisive issues in Australia and in the West. The most, one of the strongest reasons to oppose immigration is ethnic crime. And I've tried to do some work there to say that, there's a lot of a beat up about that. Ethnic entrepreneurship's an interesting field. Initially, as a very textbook Marxist, the notion of thinking about entrepreneurs was they're the enemy and whatever. But if you look at immigrant history, immigrants moved into entrepreneurship. The Chinese, the Greeks, the Italians, the Lebanese, and others, precisely because they didn't have a space in the other area because of racial discrimination. We have ethnic precincts as a spatial form of that in the city. And so what is the impact of our society of immigrant community in the spatial form? So we've done some work on Chinatown, Little Italy and Auburn and Cabramatta and things like that. Ethnic communities and the built environment of our cities and towns. This is partly what I did some work here with Kirillie and others, but the way in which immigrant communities contribute to their neighbourhood in a very, very positive way, and not only the restaurants, but also the churches and the functions. And that's an interesting thing. Another project I've got at the moment is called the Global Circulation of Teachers, because we're receiving a whole lot of immigrant teachers and we're losing a lot. So this is an interesting example of a globalisation, global circulation, and investigating the ways in which racial discrimination or other barriers shape the experience of immigrant teachers here and so forth. Another project, Tapping the Pulse of Youth in Multicultural Western and Western Sydney, funded by the Immigration Department under their National Action Program. So what we're doing there is a survey of 500 youth from about 15 different backgrounds about national identity and the flag and the Cronulla riots and belonging and all this sort of stuff. And we're trying to get that into the first year of a four-year longitudinal survey. They've committed to the first. Social cohesion and the Cronulla riots, some work that I did with some funding from the Scanlon Foundation that's funded some work on social cohesion that Andrew has also been involved in. New immigrants in regional and rural Australia. Because immigration has been essentially urban, as you know, Australia is the most urban nation in the world, and immigrants have got a higher rate of urbanisation than non-immigrants, we tend to focus on Sydney, Melbourne, whatever. However, if you look at sort of small communities, there's a terrifically important immigrant history there. Think about Griffith in the Riverina, about the Italians and so forth. And there are a number of places where that immigrant presence is important, but also more importantly, where what's happened is that the federal government is trying to redirect new immigrants out of the cities to the bush, partly because of Comrade Carr's constant criticism of multiculturalism and of immigration destroying Sydney's environment, partly because of that, that was taken up. But that's an interesting new development. A couple of others, immigration, ethnic diversity and tourism is an area that I've been working on with some colleagues funded by the European Scientific Foundation. And that's an interesting one about how ethnic diversity leads to tourism and tourist opportunities and potentials. And I suppose the other one, the final one I would mention here is comparative immigration studies. I've been doing a lot of stuff comparing Australia with Canada or the Netherlands or whatever. And I think the comparative studies thing is actually a very interesting mention. And because remember our title is Cosmopolitan Civil Societies, the plural. And I think that begs for sort of comparative analyses. So it seems to me that there are all sorts of stuff we can develop. Immigrant youth and online lives. Andrew and I are sort of working on something like that. Inter-ethnic youth relations, immigrant entrepreneurship, including females and Muslim entrepreneurship, which Angeline will talk about. Social inclusion, social cohesion. Temporary immigrants, because there's a massive increase in temporary migration with globalisation. And so forth. So it seems to me that, clearly I've selected a topic that I haven't done justice to, but I've tried to sort of sketch some preliminary thoughts about that.
Thank you very much. Before you disappear,